Hello, and welcome to another episode of Healthy Minds. My name is Julie, and I'm your host. Today, we've got three guests with us, if you can introduce yourself.
My name is Rowan, and I use she and they pronouns, and I identify as queer or pansexual.
Okay.
I am Maggie. I use they, them pronouns. I identify as queer broadly, genderqueer, non-binary, and something sexuality-wise. queer works.
I'm Katie. I use she, her pronouns. I also identify as queer, but different than Maggie's queer, in that it's mostly used to identify my sexuality and not so much my gender. And we can get into further discussion about that.
Okay. Here's your content warning for this episode. Though we are talking about LGBTQ and mental health, we do talk about suicide and suicidal ideation and a little bit about stats. It shouldn't be too heavy, but if at any time you need to talk to someone, please call Grassroots 410-531-6677. Before we hop in, let's talk a little bit about like what you're doing career-wise and all that good stuff.
I work for On Our Own of Maryland, and I am the Transitional Age Youth Outreach Project Coordinator, which is a very long title. and I work primarily with young adults who receive any kind of service, system engagement in the behavioral health field. And I also work with the programs that they work with in a myriad of ways. And I do LGBTQ work in my organization, and I provide some TA to other organizations in the state.
Okay, that's technical assistance.
Yes. So Katie again, I'm the assistant director of crisis services at Grassroots Crisis Intervention Center here in Howard County. I help to oversee our mobile crisis team, our crisis hotline. I do a lot of outreach stuff, and Maggie and I just recently over the last year created a training program called Safe Space.
Yeah, I am the LGBTQ programming consultant at Grassroots Crisis Intervention Center. So like Katie said, I helped her sort of create the Safe Space program and doing a lot of research and revamping Grassroots to make it more LGBTQ inclusive. I'm also in school to be a counselor at Johns Hopkins. I'm also an adjunct professor at Hopkins teaching on LGBTQ competency.
And you just did something super cool, which was?
I created a 3-credit LGBTQ course because Hopkins did not have one in our program. So I developed a 3-credit to sort of be a 201 to the 1-credit course that they offered, which I'm also now teaching the 1-credit. So
cool. Nice. Yay. They are really bad about bragging, and so I promise to help brag. So I forgot to introduce my pronouns, so I go by she, hers, and I am also straight and cisgendered. And so we're going to go into what these terms mean, because we just kind of hinted at all of them.
Yeah.
A useful tool we found is the genderbread person. So if you want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so the genderbread person is a graphic that we'll link in the sort of description so that listeners can take a look at it. But it basically helps to separate gender identity, gender expression, biological sex, and attraction, both sexually and romantically. All of those things are and can be very, very different for people. And I like to use the genderbread person in our safe space training because, one, it helps to really highlight those differences, but also because of the language that tends to be emphasized on it. So for the gender identity bracket, the language that we use around that is level of womanness or manness. And what can fall under gender identity is how you feel in your head and how you define your gender based on how much you align or don't align with what you understand to be the options of gender. Gender expression, which is very different from gender identity, and the scale tends to be level of femininity and masculinity. And gender expression can include just how you present yourself out to the world, your actions, your dress, your demeanor, how other people can interpret those things. And it can be from all of these things can be from a level of nothing at all to like the most on either of those scales, and they can exist at the same time. And then biological sex, again, very different from gender identity or gender expression, is femaleness and maleness. It's like a alludes to. It's very biological. It's your hormones, your chromosomes, your body hair, your secondary sex characteristics. And through transition, some or all of those things can change, which is a fun part of transition. So, and then sexual attraction and romantic attraction, which for some people can be very different. So it also helps to sort of separate those things out.
Thank you. We encourage you to look it up. You can Google genderbread person, or we'll have the link in the podcast, like I said. And so we threw out a lot of terms. So let's go over them. Let's start with probably the obvious, like LGBTQIA+, I think is the full.
It's the mini full.
Yeah. The mini full.
It's like LGBTQIAA2SQ again.
There's a lot.
We're probably missing something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's the alphabet. Yeah. And then the mini long version, LGBTQIA+, LGBTQ+, LGBTQ.
Right. Definitely.
Okay. So you want to start us off with a couple of those letters?
Sure. Do we want to start at the beginning?
Yeah.
I have to sing now. So the L stands for lesbian, which typically refers to women who are attracted to other women. Mm-hmm. The G stands for gay, which usually we think of as meaning men who are attracted to other men, but it can also be used as an umbrella term to describe anyone that isn't straight flavored.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The B typically refers to bisexual, but it can also kind of refer to pansexual,
mm-hmm.
but that really depends on who you're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I guess I'll let you do the T. Yeah.
Let's clarify what bi and pansexual mean, though.
Sure.
So I use Latin to describe this because I took Latin for a long time and I'm a huge dork. So bi is the Latin root of two. So typically bi means attracted to two genders. What that means really depends on the person that you're talking to. In the same way that pan is the Latin root of all, so typically it means being attracted to all genders.
Right.
But that really depends on who you're talking to. Like for me, pansexual really just means that I'm attracted to people regardless of their gender.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But mm-hmm. to some people, it doesn't mean that. And it's really,
it can get confusing.
It can be very confusing,
Yeah, I think for some people, pansexual means that gender doesn't matter in the attraction. And people who identify as bi, they tend to latch on to, like, I am attracted to your gender as part of what attracts me to you.
Right.
And they've sort of switched that definition from two genders to, like, my gender and other genders to start to be more inclusive of the fact that there are more than two genders. So, again, it's very personalized for whoever's using that language.
Mm-hmm. So we made it up to the B. So then we're at
T.
Yep.
T. The T is transgender, which has sort of also become an umbrella term in and of itself. Under that falls your sort of binary trans identities of transitioning from male to female or female to male. You also have your non-binary identities that fall under the trans umbrella, which can include a myriad of identities, and non-binary has also become an umbrella term as well. So you got your big umbrellas and then smaller and smaller underneath that. But some examples of non-binary identities: genderqueer, gender fluid, pangender, agender, people who don't feel like they have a gender at all. So there's a lot of things happening under the T there.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
Okay. So Q.
And then Q stands for queer, and there's a lot of different meanings of queer. So when I say I identify as queer, I talk about it in the realm of sexuality. Because when I talk about coming out, when I first came out to my mom, I came out as lesbian. And then I started dating somebody who was transgendered, and it was like, that doesn't really fit me anymore. So am I pan? Am I bi? I don't really know. I'm going to go with queer because that's all encompassing. It's kind of an umbrella term, and it's a rejection of labels for me. Mm-hmm. It's also something that I can use where I don't have to go through 8 different labels when I'm talking to somebody and give them everything I identify with. That's a deeper, more intimate conversation that requires taking me out to dinner kind of thing. So queer is essentially that, you know, I don't identify as heterosexual, but I identify within that umbrella. So it's not a gender thing for me, but queer can also be in relation to gender.
Yeah, so. I think for me, I use queer, one, as sort of a reclamation of the slur. So there's that layer of it. There's the sort of like, it takes a lot of effort to really explain all of who I am in a lot of labels. So I'll just slap queer on and sort of like Katie said, then right. You know that I'm in the community and it doesn't really matter. Right. But for me, it encompasses both my sexuality and my gender because I'm not cisgender. I don't fully align with my assigned female at birth status. So being able to let people know that as well, I think is really important for me in that label.
Right. And queer doesn't fit everybody. I mean, even within the community itself, queer sometimes is completely rejected within the community, especially when we're talking about the older population mm-hmm. and what trauma came along with that word for mm-hmm. them. I didn't experience it in that way for most of my life, so it doesn't hold that intensity that it might for somebody who is a generation older than I am. Mm-hmm. So really asking a person what queer means to them mm-hmm. is going to get you a long way, mm-hmm. and asking if it's okay to use that term in a social context.
Because I know that personally, I wouldn't use the word queer in the general public, mm-hmm. because that means that I'm going to have to explain it, which I'm fine doing in a setting like this, because it for me, it really means being a part of the community.
Right.
And I don't always want to explain that to a person when I'm buying chicken nuggets. So,
yeah.
Right.
And I think that's probably a good time to talk maybe about some of the, like, how do you talk about this with other people? So being really mindful of what people are telling you would be mm-hmm. the best way to, you know, be a nice person, and also checking with the person that you're speaking to about what they're comfortable with sharing out and about as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So the first layer is like, if you're in a situation where it's appropriate to ask about identity, which is like, check about appropriateness. Don't just go asking people how they identify willy-nilly.
Right.
But like, if you're engaging in that conversation, what does that mean? So like, they let you know that's the language that they use for themselves. What does that mean for you? Mm-hmm. Like Katie and I have said, our queerness is very different. So the first level of that, is it appropriate to be engaging in this conversation? And you don't want to just start asking people how they identify out of nowhere. But if the conversation is going there, asking the person the language that they use for themselves, the second layer of that being, what does that mean for you? And then, as you sort of alluded to, like, is this something that people know? Like, is this, what level of safety do you have in this being knowledge to other people?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I think we're at I, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. I is intersex. Everything is a spectrum.
Right.
And even biological sex is a spectrum. I think for a very long time, we as a society have assumed maleness, femaleness. In reality, there is a wide spectrum of biological sex. Anybody who is not fully male or fully female is intersex. And there's, I believe, 46 different versions of intersexuality. So a lot. Yeah. And it boils down to hormone differences, chromosomal differences, secondary sex characteristics where maybe you have a penis, but you also have breasts naturally. Mm-hmm. And so there's like all of this fluidity in biological sex as well, which isn't a thing that is talked about very often. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's I. Okay. Right.
And A?
Asexual.
Mm-hmm.
So the A umbrella, asexual, aromantic. I think some agender people can lump themselves mm-hmm. under that A instead mm-hmm. of the T. Mm-hmm. So it's just sort of like, I'm not sexually attracted to anybody. I'm not romantically attracted to anybody. I don't align with a gender at all. Mm-hmm. Any of that sort of falls under the A
right.
there. Mm-hmm. It's not ally. We love our allies, but unfortunately, our acronym is filled up with people actually in the community.
I was just going to ask you, because I've heard ally before.
Yes.
So,
yeah. We have a lot of letters.
Yes.
And a lot of people in our community.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, allies have a space out in the world already.
Right.
So let's keep our people in our acronym.
In your own umbrella.
Yeah.
Okay, so why are we talking about LGBTQIA+ today on our Healthy Minds podcast? So First, we know that there is a lot of intersectionality between being on this umbrella or on this spectrum and having some mental health issues or struggles or whatever we want to call them. So I know that we're going to go over some statistics.
Yep. Yeah. So that first number there, just talking about mental health in general, is that LGBTQ individuals are 3 times more likely to experience mental health issues.
Right.
And so like from the start, we know that there's just a vulnerability there to mental health concerns. So
right. They're at much higher risk for suicidal ideation and suicide attempts. When you look at some of the youth studies, LGBTQ youth are 3 to 5 times more likely to experience suicidal ideation. And it depends on where in the spectrum you fall with that. You know, when we talk about the different acronyms, trans individuals are at much higher risk than even LGB individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So those numbers are really alarming when we're looking at mental health and we're looking at suicide risk.
Yeah. Of the whole population of LGBTQ individuals, our numbers around 41 to 43% have experienced suicidal ideation. When you boil that down to trans individuals specifically, that number jumps up to, very conservatively, 50 to 64% have experienced ideation.
Mm-hmm.
Trans Lifeline recently did a mental health survey, and their number was much higher, in like high 80s mm-hmm. percent of trans individuals have experienced ideation, and mid 50% have attempted in their life.
Yeah.
Wow.
And some of the, when Maggie says these are conservative estimates, when we talk about that, it's hard to get really good research numbers for this population. When we're talking about attempts or even completed suicides, death certificates are you know, they specify gender only within the binary. Same with hospitalizations. Mm-hmm. And so we don't know necessarily what the true numbers are in a lot of these stats.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I know that back when I was working in the field with the young adults, we had a form that was a national form and I couldn't change, so I really wanted to, that said, what is your sex? And said, male, mm-hmm. female, transgender as a third option. And I was like, ah! And so I went to our research person and I was like, ah! And they were like, yes, we can't change it.
Right.
And I was like, because there's so many things wrong with that.
With the way that we collect data and the forms that we have to use, or that we're given to use a lot of times, and just the limitations of what we're actually asking and the language around how we're asking it,
right.
I think really is a detriment to being able to know, one, to like gather this information, but also to make people feel included.
Right.
Right. And that's one of the things that I've been working on at Grassroots is changing all of our forms to be more inclusive. And the subtle shifts from, you know, asking gender instead of sex and using a blank space so that you can put whatever you feel.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, we have the sort of freedom to be able to do that I know not all places do, but just the language around how we're asking these things in order to get proper data and to make people feel included.
Right. And that inclusivity in itself impacts mental health for this population. Mm-hmm. So it all circles around.
Mm-hmm. And it also limits the amount of services that we can provide to the community as a whole, because if you're not getting accurate numbers, then where do you find the money to provide the services?
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Absolutely.
And I would say that it's probably also a safety thing. In some aspects, maybe you don't want to share that information because your employer might get it, or you're worried about your job or whatnot.
Right, right. Or for people who are trans and passing as their gender identity, to be put in a position where you have to out yourself as trans, or you know, where you're asked to out yourself as trans may not be safe, especially if you are in a position to be able to pass.
Right.
That can be a safety concern as well. So.
Yeah. So I think Rowan has some Howard County stats for us.
I do, and I want to specify that this data is specifically for sexual orientation and not gender identity, because the Youth Risk Behavior Survey in Maryland does not ask gender identity questions.
Mm-hmm.
But so I pulled 2 different data points to kind of talk about the span of behavioral health. And the first one If you want to look, it's question 27. and it's the percentage of students who made a plan about how they would attempt suicide. And making a plan is super important when we're talking about risk factors and suicide ideation. And the heterosexual youth in Howard County identified 10.5% of them said yes to that question.
Wow.
Whereas the LGB, which is the lesbian, gay, and bisexual students, identified that 35.5% of them.
Yeah.
So that's... Mm. Math is hard. 20% more?
A lot more.
Yeah. A lot more. Yeah. Let's not make me do math.
Yeah. Three times more.
That's a lot.
We're seeing nationally trending.
Right.
So.
And the second question was about heroin use, which I know that Maryland and the country as a whole is currently in an opioid epidemic. So it's really important that we talk about that, especially what populations are at higher risk to use opioids. And heterosexual youth, only 1%. Identified ever using heroin, and 11.7% of LGB youth. And I've looked at data for across the state, and that's low, but pretty standard.
Yeah.
Wow.
Typically, it's a lot higher. So yay, Howard County, but also
still heartbreaking.
Still really startling.
Yeah.
And that was kind of across the board for all of the different questions about drug use was the LGB students were always saying yes at a higher rate.
So let's talk about why that might be and all the fun stuff that goes with coming out, being in the closet, et cetera.
Yeah. So those risk factors to mental health. Katie and I, our training is on LGBTQ and suicide, so a lot of our information is a little bit more suicide specifically targeted. But one of the things that we emphasize is that being LGBTQ is not a risk factor in and of itself. It's all of the stuff that comes along with being in the community. And that's the discrimination, the stigma, the fear of coming out, the lack of support once you do come out. Yeah, just all increased risk of sexual trauma and forced sex, specifically in the trans community and trans women of color.
We circle it back and we link it to Joyner's theory for suicidal behavior and how it really fits in nicely with that theory, unfortunately. But two of the three components for that theory are perceived burdensomeness and low belongingness. And those two are oftentimes prevalent in this community. You know, when we're talking about rejection from family or, you know, not feeling like you fit in or feeling like there's no place for you. And then consistently experiencing those types of things over and over and over again brings in the third piece of the theory, which is capability for suicide. And the longer a person is exposed to that and the more times they are exposed to that level of pain, they get used to that pain and have a tolerance to where they're more comfortable with the idea of suicide. So it really is a big deal.
Yeah, right, one of the things that we see is that LGBTQ individuals are more likely to use lethal means when attempting suicide. And the aligning it back to Joyner's theory is that there is an increased pain tolerance. And so there is a drive to use something more lethal to sort of end the pain and you needing a higher level of pain in order to end the pain and all of that sort of joining together really sadly in a lot of suicidal ideation and deaths by suicide.
And I think a lot of it comes back to the lack of services that we have for the community. I come from the Eastern Shore and there are no services that are LGBTQ specific on the shore besides the two P flags that are located there. And that's not just for behavioral health services, but also for somatic services. So if you are trans and want to go to a doctor, are you going to have to move to receive that care? Or are you going to have to hope that you find a doctor that is accepting?
Access to inclusive, affirmative, not just mental health care, but also physical health is few and far between for this community.
Inclusivity and cultural competence is one of the biggest things that Maggie and I talk about when we talk about how we can work towards prevention. Because when people feel more included, we're getting rid of that perceived burdensomeness and that low belongingness. And so we're taking, if we can tackle those things far ahead of when somebody becomes suicidal or has major mental health issues, mm-hmm. then we're going to see an overall change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that extends to substance use as well, because right. there are, as far as I'm aware, no recovery-based services that even advertise Mm-mm. as being LGBTQ inclusive or specific.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
Yeah. So unfortunately, we only have like 2 minutes left in our episode. And, you know, the conversation really was a lot deeper than I was expecting. And I'm so thrilled by that. Mm-hmm. However, that means that we have a lot of really good information that we do need to cut out, you know, in order to meet this time slot. So we were just chatting off mic and said that we're going to come back to you guys probably in the early new year and do like a part two of this episode so that yeah. we can really get in depth about some more of these issues like microaggressions.
Mm-hmm.
So really quick resources, like just the names of them.
Right. So I would always throw out PFLAG as a huge option. Here in Howard County, we have the main hub chapter of Maryland. There's 5 other chapters in Maryland. So hop on the internet, check out PFLAG.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Grassroots is always a good resource. you know, we have a 24/7 hotline, 24/7 mm-hmm. walk-in crisis counseling. And so people are available all the time, and staff are trained in safe space. So
yeah.
We are inclusive as mm-hmm. much as we can be.
If you're in the city, GLCCB provides pretty good services. And also mm-hmm. there's Free State Justice if mm-hmm. you're looking for more legal-based services.
Mm-hmm.
And the Trevor Project.
And the Trevor Project.
And the yes. Trevor Project does really awesome stuff.
They have a hotline, right?
They have a hotline. Yeah. Chase Brexton for more of the physical health care stuff. check out Chase Brexton for affirmative LGBTQ stuff there.
Yeah. And yeah. Trans Lifeline.
Yes, and Trans Lifeline, which I mentioned earlier. They are the only peer-run trans support line run by trans people for trans people.
Right. Okay, great. So we're going to hop into our self-care send-off here.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that Maggie and Rowan had kind of a similar one, so I'll let you guys share.
Yeah. My big one that I use is sitting in the shower. I use it for when I'm anxious, when I'm dissociating, when I'm depressed. Just, hey, I'm going to sit in the shower. Not take a shower, sit in the shower. So that's my big go-to.
And my new apartment has a bathtub, so I can take baths again, which is amazing. And for me, it's just like I'll grab a bath bomb or Epsom salts and just like sit in the bath and pretend that the world doesn't exist for like 10 minutes. And it's great. Yeah.
Great. So everybody take extra showers and baths for self-care this month. So thank you all so much for listening. Thank you for joining me to my lovely guests. And stay tuned for the next episode of Healthy Minds.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.